Hi, guys, and welcome to this week's episode of Taste of Premiere. Today I have Herman Bozeman with me, and we are going to talk about Office 365 operational readiness. So without further ado, cue the music. Hey, guys, I've got Herman Bozeman with me today. Herman, you there?
I'm here, Lex. Thanks for having me.
Hey, how's it going, buddy?
Excellent. Happy to be here doing Taste of Premiere with you.
Awesome. So to give you guys a little background, Herman and I have known each other for a long time. When I became a TAM, Herman was the guy that had the accounts that I have currently. And so we worked together. We were co-TAMs on the account for a while and then ended up, Herman ended up transitioning off.
Into the Office 365 world.
Into the Office 365 world. How do you like your gig, Herman?
I love it. It's just great doing different things. I love the work I did before. You and I had a great customer. If they're listening, they know who we're talking about. And I really love doing the service delivery management for Office 365. It's where everything is going.
Awesome. Yep, that's awesome. So you've had a while now in the Office 365 world. Just a couple of questions that I have for you. Number one, what do you think the biggest challenges are that customers face moving from on-premise installations of things like Exchange to, you know, the Office 365 off-premise implementation?
Hey, thanks, Lex. It's a great question. A lot of people are very focused on the actual migration and how they're going to get from A to B, get their data from on-prem and into the clouds. But what I've seen is another huge consideration, concern a lot of customers have is, the perceived loss of control of their servers. Someone else will be managing their servers. And management at a high level, at the CIO, CEO level, they've made that decision for the betterment of the organization, be it a government organization or a commercial enterprise. But when it gets down to the IT administrator, they're wondering, what are things going to be like when the servers are not right here in a data center that I can walk into? So that perceived loss of control, what will things be like when someone else is managing my resources? That's something that everyone has to overcome. It's pretty common.
Yeah. And not just that, right? Not just physical access to the servers. A lot of customers are concerned about it, you know, kind of where their data is going to be.
Well, exactly. And it shouldn't be a concern. I mean, when you understand the Office 365 service, you know exactly what you're getting into, especially for our government customers and whom I work with almost, you know, exclusively these days. We keep 100% of our customers' data in the United States. If you're in one of those corresponding programs, we have the ITAR version of Office 365. Everything is located right here in the United States. There's never any question or doubt about the location of your data.
Awesome. Awesome. So I hear you have a presentation for us.
Well, you know, I would call it a presentation, Lex, because those can get boring. But, you know, I do have some talking points and just a couple of, you know, pieces to show and tell. So I'll bring those up and we can go through those. Thanks, Lex. So, here's a simple slide deck that I've put together just to kind of, show some points so that people can listen and see. I think it makes it a little bit easier. So today we're going to talk about Office 365 operational readiness topics. Let me go ahead and advance to the next slide. So, Lex, what I'd like to do is kind of, you know, pick up for people after the migration. We're going to focus on operations. You know, what do people have to consider when they're running this service, you know, from the customer perspective day by day over time?
Yeah. So they've already migrated their data. Now it's just a matter of using the service.
Absolutely. And again, the migration is usually this, it's the upfront piece. It looks like the biggest piece at first, but, you know, strong operations, service maturity, IT service management methodologies, this is the long term. So let's focus folks on this. And when we adopt good, strong ITSM practices, we have a much better experience, both on-prem and in the cloud. So if you've adopted a methodology already, it definitely translates into the cloud.
Awesome.
So, you know, right after your migration starts, I mean, day one, you know, your migration starts and you're migrating test user accounts, your service desk has to be ready. So, and of course, you have to be prepared to turn over to operations long term. But again, you have one person, it might be someone in IT, a test user, a friendly user that can take a few hiccups. You still want to be able to run them through the service desk function if they're having difficulties, because long term, that's how they're going to escalate issues for either internal resolution or resolution by Microsoft. So this is a key stage right here. You know, don't forget, you know, to prepare your service desk. Don't forget to do some parallel planning. That's what I'm trying to show with the two arrows. Let's not be 100% focused on migration, but let's go ahead and focus on, you know, what things will be like the day that we migrate the first account.
Cool.
So let me just go ahead and kind of build this out a little bit. So we all know that the primary interface from every customer in O365 to Microsoft is the service desk. So, you know, the key things to think about as you're planning to go to Office 365 is, you know, what your service desk will look like to find the model. And what will they do and who will do it? So define the roles of people on your service desk, you know, and define their duties. So there's several, you know, different models we could look at. We could have a completely centralized model. Even if you have a solid on-prem service desk right now for on-prem issues, you may come in and overlay an online service desk strictly for Office 365. So that would be the centralized model. You could also run a hybridized model where you have some issues are resolved by the centralized service desk, where some other cloud-related issues are resolved by IT admins at a sub-organizational level, at a different business unit or agency. And then you could also have a completely decentralized model that has potential maybe for getting a little out of control, where you don't have just one group to go to, but you definitely could do it where, for example, you have 10 or more agencies and they each have direct access to contact Microsoft. And then exactly, you know, what will they do? Will they be responsible for all Exchange, all Link, all SharePoint, for example, or will there be shared duties? And then define those duties so that it's very clear. You know, this is all, you know, typical kind of project management focus, MOF and ITIL operational definitions, but it's something we have to think about as we prepare for the cloud. So Lex, you know, with the service desk model and defining roles and defining duties, we were trying to drive an efficient request management function through the service desk. That's what we're going to get from the output of this planning up front. We want to ensure clear responsibilities for our customers, that they're thinking about it, that they can turn around and then, you know, delight their internal customers with, you know, how well their service desk is prepared. They exactly know who is going to do what. And we're going to reduce confusion. No one wants to, you know, escalate to a service desk. They don't know where to go. They don't know where to begin troubleshooting. If they can't resolve it themselves, perhaps they have no support that they can turn to for assistance. And they don't want to have to just funnel everything through to Microsoft support, because Microsoft support resolves online issues, and we have to be sure that we know who's resolving on-prem issues. So definitely reduce confusion here is the benefit of a clearly defined service desk model.
That's a great point. So I just to avoid confusion, right? I'm sure we've got some folks out there that are thinking, okay, so take me from point A to point B. So if I'm an end user, my account's been moved to Office 365, I start having an issue, I'm going to call my local service desk.
You may, yeah, and that depends on the model you want to have. So there's probably already a local service desk in place for every business unit, and end users are certainly used to contacting them, so it makes sense not to break that first step in the contact chain. So yes, they would probably do that. And then that tier one would then turn around and say, you know, we've done all our due diligence. It's not a local network issue. It's not a client configuration issue, right? It's not a firewall port, you know, closure issue, that type of thing. Now it's time for me to turn around and escalate this to our tier two, which would be probably that centralized service desk, which is authorized to talk to Microsoft.
Okay. So I open a tier one case. My tier one group then either solves it or opens a tier two case, right, in your model. And then
exactly.
the tier two folks try and solve it. If they can solve it, great. If they can't solve it, then they call who?
If Tier 2 can't solve it, right, and if Tier 2 is the interface to Microsoft, then they would call Microsoft Online Support, for example, in the dedicated model. We call it MOSSUP. Or if they were a premier customer in Office 365 multi-tenant, which most of our customers are, they would leverage Premier Support, and they would use the TAM that they're familiar with, they have a relationship with. They might call that person first, or they might just pick up the phone and call the support number.
Yeah, awesome. And so what if it turns out to be a server-side issue?
If it's a server-side issue, we're going to fix it, right? Regardless, the customers get problem resolution support with Office 365. We're going to do our due diligence. We're going to investigate on our side. We're certainly going to ask the customer if they can be clear in telling us exactly what they're experiencing. Is there a specific error message that they've received? Is it one user or multiple users? Is it people on a certain network segment? Standard troubleshooting, but that's just going to help us. But certainly, we're going to do a lot of the work ourselves. The customers are going to come to us and say, we've done due diligence. We're IT professionals. We know what to look for, and we've ruled all these things out. Will you please check the server-side components? And then absolutely, we're going to be all over that.
Yeah. So the point that I'm trying to make, and the reason that I wanted to walk through that step by step, is because I want to make sure that we don't have end users out there that are concerned about what happens, concerned about how they get support when they need it. And generally, I think the answer is nothing changes from their perspective.
That's a very good point. And it depends on each shop, right? And if they have a large shop and you're used to kind of abstracting your support by calling a local service desk, if you're an end user, you'll keep on doing that. Right. Nothing changes. You're going to let the IT pros do what they do, and they're going to work with Microsoft.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, next.
Next. Okay. A big one is lifecycle. Everyone's very focused on the service desk. I mean, you can't get by without having a service desk, regardless of the level of efficiency or organization, or if you've clearly defined your roles and duties, you're going to have a service desk. But what can be, easily forgotten or put off till much later is lifecycle management, and that's huge. And lifecycle management doesn't just cover, where the service itself is going. That is, are we on the 2010 version of Microsoft services, Exchange, Link, or SharePoint? Or are we on the 2013 version of those services? It's also what are the preferred and supported clients that work with those services? So it's going to drive your on-premises lifecycle management as well. For example, if, a time back, we dropped support for Outlook 2003, no longer supported. So, some customers, they're trying to, stay on a certain version that everyone's trained on and comfortable with and familiar with, but the service will push them ahead. And so even now, we have a lot of customers that are on the 2007 version of Office on the desktop. And for example, Outlook 2007, with the latest service pack is the latest supported version of Outlook with Exchange Server 2013. So what that means is you're at the lowest rung and probably time to start planning to move forward at a minimum really of Outlook 2010, but really to take best advantage, full advantage of the newest features, you're going to want to start moving your desktop users to 2013. So it's clearly going to push your planning for on-prem software deployment. Some of our services, well, certainly with the XP end of support, you're going to want to start getting off of Windows XP by April 8th, 2014. And you're going to want to start adopting either Windows 7 or Windows 8. And we have some products, Link 2013 client requires the Windows 7 as a minimum desktop. So again, if you're a Link subscriber, you're going to need to advance your desktop OS platform with the service requirement. So it's going to move your whole platform. It's going to move your desktop, and it's going to move your desktop app. So lifecycle management, insight into what you have on the desktop, and good reports from every sub agency or business unit rolled up maybe to centralized desktop management or CIO level. It's going to be critical. Feature management is another kind of a big point. What do your end users want? What do your business groups require? We need to take requests from them through a controlled process so that we can either inform them that these features are in the service already, or that they're already slated on the roadmap and that they're coming, or that maybe you want to escalate to Microsoft. There's a set of features that you don't yet see that you would like to see, and maybe talk about getting those in the service at some future point. And I skipped change control. I didn't mean to skip change control at all. That's going to be huge as well. Change control is going to help you ensure the standards of your environment, know exactly where you are across the board. It should help reduce confusion. Right. You know, we have lots of different versions, major and minor. Your desktops have lots of different versions, hotfixes, major and minor. And manage, you know, business requirements, right? Does a certain business application, line of business app require, you know, certain components to best integrate with our online services? So lifecycle management, Lex, is huge. Again, often kind of put off as maybe too large to address, but it really shouldn't be.
Cool. Yeah. So what happens if I'm a non-PC-based client, right? What happens if I have a Mac?
If you have a Mac, you can use it. There's Office 2011 is the current version for the Mac platform. You can use Link. There's Link for the Mac, and there's Outlook for the Mac. Those are fully supported by Exchange 2010 and Link 2010 and the 2013 version of the services as well.
Awesome. So, and of course, we support all of the mail clients that we ship with Windows 8.1, right?
Absolutely, Lex. Exchange Server and client compatibility. If you're using, supported protocols, especially Exchange ActiveSync, you're golden.
Awesome.
So we can move on a little bit. And communication is the kind of the next thing I wanted to, focus folks on. Big and obvious, and really communication kind of underlies, every phase of every project and all aspects of IT service management. So don't take this to mean it's a separate, isolated thing to itself. The service desk has to communicate. We have to communicate feedback from the field and back to the field as part of lifecycle management. But for communication, definitely make sure you've engaged your decision makers. These can be IT decision makers, people that control budgets, right? That control personnel, that prioritize projects, as well as the business decision makers. Is it a certain key time of the year for them? Everyone uses tax season as a great example. Is it tax season? Is it some other critical, time of the year for a particular business? So you have to, be in sync with your business decision makers as well as your IT decision makers so that they know what's needed. If there's going to be potential, impact or downtime, they're going to want to know about it. In the dedicated version of the service, there's, the ability to temporarily postpone certain service plan changes if they're going to impact, again, some of those very sensitive times of the year for each customer. So that needs to be considered and escalated back to the service. So there is that level of white glove service and flexibility with a dedicated service. Also, the IT community itself, all your admins, everyone that, has been involved with the environment, they know it. Maybe they used to manage Exchange, and maybe they're still involved with managing Exchange online. Maybe they're part of the individual service desks at each lower level, not the centralized service desk. Take them in, listen to them. What are they hearing from the end users? What are they hearing from their CIOs that they report to? Take that in and communicate back. Also, another huge point, besides feedback from the field, is just keeping people informed about what's going on with the service. If you're in a multi-tenant environment, we communicate through the Office 365 blog, regularly. Go out there and find out, what new features are being pushed, what's available, what's changing, what's coming. Certainly make your IT community across the board aware of that, as well as those business and IT decision makers, and then use your own judgment about whether, those communications are good for the end users. But there are some things you're going to want to, push down to your end users. You don't want them to feel isolated. You don't want them to feel cut off. You don't want them to feel that, things have gone in a completely different direction. So, have some kind of communications rhythm across all three, levels, strata here, decision makers, IT community, and end users. Keep them happy. Keep them happy with you as the service desk or a lifecycle function owner, and keep them happy with the service that you've moved to. I think it's going to pay dividends for you in the end.
Cool.
And just some outputs of that. So just a few outputs. You're going to manage your organizational expectations of the service, right? And you'll be able to respond to that field feedback, and it should result, internally in satisfied customers, not just in customers satisfied with Microsoft, which we love, but if you're that internal service desk or lifecycle manager or communications manager, it's important that your internal customers are satisfied with the service you are delivering.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I can move on, Lex, or if you have any questions about where we've gone so far.
No, I think I'm good. I mean, it's really interesting. This is pretty cool. I mean, I think that you've thought about all of the important points, right? We've got service desk, we've got life cycle, we've got communication. I can't wait to see what's next in the on the slide deck.
Oh, now the pressure's on, so I hope it's not a letdown. So, admin tasks. So I don't know if the subject here of this one really does it justice, so I'll try to explain it a little better. We're all used to doing things a certain way on-prem, right? You're going to have to get used to doing things the online way, making sure you're familiar with the online tools, the service health dashboard, all the tools and remote PowerShell, you know, which you can use PowerShell on-prem, but definitely make sure you're adept at PowerShell in managing Exchange, and getting in there and understanding how to enable features, creating new mailboxes, you know, all those standard tasks that you did on-prem. You just have to learn, you know, the differences between the tools and the way you did things before and how you'll do things in the online environment. Think about your daily administration tasks or weekly, whatever period. You know, what are you doing regularly, you know, either for, you know, as part of your IT duties internal, just to your IT team, maybe providing reports, you know, understanding where things are, or, you know, fulfilling, you know, end user requests, like we've added, you know, a new user or someone's changed their name or, you know, we have to SIP enable someone for link or, you know, just a slew of different tasks. So think about those things that you would normally do. And then figure out, you know, pretty quickly, you know, how you're going to do those, you know, in the online service. And, you know, if you have short notice, right, if there's not a lot of time, if you're ramping up a lot of users right away, this is where it probably makes sense to leverage, you know, any support resources you have, Microsoft Premier Support, you know, Microsoft Consulting Services, any third-party support you might have, just to, you know, make that transition very easy for you so that you understand the tools, you understand the how, and you can get it done without pain for your end users.
Yeah. And so I want to make sure that this doesn't sound scary to admins, right? Because we talked earlier about how the experience really isn't any different for the end user, right? For the admin, it's a little bit different because you're going to have a different set of tools. But that's really the only difference, right? Instead of, you said it earlier, instead of being able to walk up to the keyboard and make the changes yourself, you've essentially got to use the tools to spawn a task that I guess we act upon later.
Well, you know, you're going to have access, you know, to the Exchange Management Console, for example. You'll be able to use some familiar tools, certainly. But then there are some tools that we provide that you would only use in an online space.
So that's cool. So what I'm hearing is that if I'm an admin, I still have some tools that I can use to directly manage my infrastructure.
Absolutely, Lex. I mean, your experience with, you know, on-prem tools is going to carry over into the online space to a degree. And to a degree, there's going to be some learning.
Awesome.
Thanks, Lex. And the last one under admin tasks would be external requests. They happen. They can push your timetable. They can push your readiness to be able to fulfill that external request. You might get a request for a search of email data from mailboxes, from archives, right, and need to be able to provide it within the requested time frame. And if you haven't gotten, you know, spun up on exactly, you know, how to get that information, you know, then you could, you know, find yourself, you know, scrambling, a little nervous, maybe needing to ask for some help. But this is the kind of thing you need to kind of write down, make a list of those types of external requests, daily admin tasks that you're normally doing. And then if you know these things are going to come around again, definitely work with your premier you know, resources, the technical account manager, whomever you're working with. Try to figure out how to do these things so they don't become a surprise, that you're just ready to tackle these things when they come around.
Yeah, so it sounds like there's not really a lot of difference here. You just have to have the you just have to make sure that you know how to handle those requests when they come in.
It just, you know, just think about it. Just be prepared. And I'm hoping that, you know, this slide deck, this conversation will just get people thinking about that, because everyone's going to be very focused on, we've migrated, you know, we're using this new thing, but business continues and we're enabling your business. And we want to reduce surprises for you by helping you think about what you have to do normally and just being prepared to, you know, tackle that when it comes your way.
Right, and that's all encompassing. That's all of the admin tasks, right? That's good for all
Absolutely.
Of the tasks. The tools, daily administration, any external requests you might receive, et cetera.
Absolutely. Learn up front how to do what you did on-prem. I mean, I can't say it any differently than that or better than that. If you did it a certain way on-prem, quickly figure out how to do the, you know, your bread and butter tasks online.
Awesome.
And the last section, Lex, and we all know about this, knowledge management. Again, this kind of cuts across, you know, basically, again, like communications, like everything. I mean, everything stripes across, right? Service desk, you're going to want to maintain a knowledge base, right? You resolve X number of issues, service requests by your tier one service desk that don't have to be escalated to tier two. Please retain that knowledge. Please retain that at the tier one level. Please share that at the tier two level within your organization, so that, you know, we know how to, or you know how to resolve these things before they become big issues. Just knock them out basically like you're hitting them from a cache, right? You know, oh, I've seen this before. Here's the answer. You know, reduce time to resolution. Your customers are happy, right? Change database, right? You know, as we're working through lifecycle and change control and we're planning where the service is going and what's on the roadmap, And what your end users and your decision makers and IT community, what they are looking for, we need to document that so we're prepared to, or you are prepared to have those conversations with, you know, with your customer team, with your account executive, your services executive, with your technical account manager. You know, let them know, you know, going forward what you expect from the service. And communications. I mean, it does make sense to kind of, you know, maintain, you know, a database of the communications you send out to the field, to those end users, to the IT community and your decision makers. You may have to resend it. You may want to have an on-demand archive. You know, you may want to have an autoresponder if someone, you know, emails a help distribution list at your service desk and says, you know, what about this? You may want to respond back automatically and say, you know, here's the link to the SharePoint site, where with all the communications we've sent, you know, maybe filtered by month, so you know exactly where to go out for information we've already sent. So knowledge management is huge. It's key. You're going to want to document that, you know, for your admin tasks. You're going to want to document it for your communication section, lifecycle. Again, all that information should be documented in some kind of knowledge database and your service desk. I mean, as IT pros, we're all very familiar with the Microsoft KV, third-party KVs, but you really should have your own internal knowledge base as well and manage that closely.
Cool. So, Herman, let me just ask you one more question.
Sure.
Does everybody that purchases Office 365 get a Herman Bozeman?
Okay. Good question. Office 365 does come with a service delivery manager that is a cloud specialist and how to deliver the cloud service, right? So you go to them and say, you know, how do I do X? How do I do Y? How do I do Z? What's the time frame for this? What's the retention period for that? That is a part of the Office 365 service.
Awesome. So I guess the takeaways are, if you are considering moving to the cloud, it might be a bit of a scary proposition, but you know, you don't really need to worry about it. There are some things that you need to prepare for, but that's okay. You're going to have a Microsoft person that's there to help you, just like you do today. If you're a Premier customer, you have a TAM, so you know what that's all about. We don't like our customers to fail. We will fight to, you know, to make sure that our customers succeed. And that's kind of the bottom line for me.
Absolutely, Lex. You know, we will escalate to the rooftops for our customers if we have to. And sometimes we do. And I know our customers appreciate it. And, you know, we like nothing better than to see our customers get what they need.
Awesome. All right, guys. Well, thank you so much. I'd like to thank Herman.
Thank you, Lex. I appreciate it. It's a fantastic opportunity.
Yep, and I'd like to thank everybody listening or watching. We certainly enjoy doing these for you. And that's this week's Taste of Premier.